Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Post Show Recaps coverage of The Crown. My name is Grace. We are back for Season 5, Episode 3, Moo Moo. I paid a lot of money to sit next to my co-host, Shannon, how you doing?
I really enjoyed this episode of, I guess, The Crown? we talked about the mini-movie thing. This was, like, the epitome of the mini-movie that was, like, very far away. The furthest away I think we've ever been, which we'll talk about, from The Crown. So I'm doing great. I really enjoyed it. I am keen to talk to both people on this podcast, not to preempt it. So I'm excited today.
I love that last week we were like, I was like, oh, you got a Claire Foy flashback. And it's like, all right, you know what Shannon needs now? A King Edward flashback.
Yeah.
that's what we need from the show. Well, yeah.
You always get a bit of a King Edward episode, even though he has died. We're still going to get it.
Very true. Well, we have a guest on who hasn't died. I'm very excited to be joined for the first time on The Crown Pod. Mike Bloom, aka Mai Mai. How you doing?
My. Woo! Yes. I don't think I've ever been introduced with the moniker Not Dead Yet, which is factually true, I suppose. So yeah, thank you for just, I mean, listen, this show is also showcasing like the inevitability march towards death that we all experience, considering the person that is the front and center of it. So happy to be here to get into something completely different, to quote another British property.
Oh yeah,
try not to spoil that Diana's gonna die on the podcast.
Listen, we all got the Beanie Baby. We all heard the Elton John cover.
Oh, you didn't have the Diana Beanie Baby?
You did Princess Diana Beanie Baby? Didn't hear about this?
Oh my God, why am I being shamed for not having the Princess Diana Beanie Baby?
It was like just was a really big thing in like North America. So I don't know.
I was in South Africa. What was it? So she died?
No, I'm just saying, I said that to like make it's, you know, it's just like a purple bear with like a white, what kind of flower is it?
I think it's like white, it might be a white rose.
A white rose? It's a white rose. Yeah.
But it was released like months after she died. And much like many Beanie Babies at the time, it just like skyrocketed in value.
And also Diana. Like, no, I don't think it was a Beanie Baby thing. Well, maybe it was probably like the combination of these two phenomenons, right? Like Beanie Babies and Princess Diana.
Yeah. So it seems like should there have been other ones?
Marketing
ploy. Should there have been like Princess Diana Tamagotchis?
You didn't have a Princess Diana Tamagotchi, Mike?
Well, considering some of the things that she ran into in season 4, maybe a Tamagotchi isn't the best thing, considering like you have to feed it, you have to take care of it.
Oh my God.
Not work necessarily for the plight of unfortunate Diana Spencer.
It's a special crown Diana Tamagotchi where you play as the royal family and you just neglect the Tamagotchi.
That really is
it surges in popularity. You're not allowed to touch it or acknowledge it. You scold it for being too popular.
And then here comes Dodie being like, I'll take care of you, Tamagotchi. Don't you worry. Your owners may ignore you, but I won't.
And then after that, we don't know what happens. Stop spoiling the show. It's a non-spoiler recap.
Yeah. Well, we said last episode, you were like, I don't think Diana dies this season. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she doesn't. That, if anything, actually is like a spoiler of the show itself. I love how we got Mike on the podcast 3 minutes in. You don't get more unhinged than Diana Tamagotchi that the royal family neglects until its demise. Yeah. And that's the energy that Mike brings to the podcast. So I'm so excited that Mike is here to make this just completely off the rails. Yeah.
I have the vibrancy of Mohammed Al-Fayed's shirts that he wears on the reg.
That's right. Mike, this is your first, you're going to come chat about The Crown. You reached out. I believe I saw you, I think, messaging about The Crown in the Push Recaps patron Discord a little while ago. Give us your like Crown history and your thoughts up to basically up till this episode.
Yeah. So to go back to my own history of the history, I suppose, I was definitely a Johnny come lately to The Crown. Shannon knows this because she was someone that also belatedly caught up. It was something I only really watched last year after season 4 came out. And it really was just like a spur of the moment thing for me where I just thought, yeah, let me watch it. You know what it honestly may have been was that last year, going into this year, I had done a podcast with my wife where we had watched The X-Files. I had never seen it before. It's one of her favorite shows of all time, starring Gillian Anderson, who is one of the few Yanks to make the journey across the pond, partially due to her relationship with Peter Morgan, to play Margaret Thatcher in season 4 of The Crown. And I was like, all right, let me try to check this out. Because I do think for me, and let me also very much base this, if Diana Tamagotchi is not any indication, you know, I am coming in from a very casual perspective to not only The Crown, but I would say the royal business in general. I, like the two of you, am a child of the 90s, so I certainly remember it. Hell, I mentioned the Diana Beanie Baby, but I do feel like I was not exactly brought within all the gossip that was going on at those formative ages. And so I will admit, like, the material was never particularly interesting to me. I was certainly interested in the actors. Love me some Jonathan Lithgow. Love me some Matt Smith. So I was like, okay, that sounds...
Yeah.
Claire Foy. Well, Claire Foy, actually, Claire
the guy who was, plays Edward.
Well, Claire Foy, she did host SNL and she was fun. So she
hosted SNL.
She did host SNL. But yeah, she's pretty good at it, actually. That ended up hooking me in. I will admit, and I talked about this because I was guesting on the White Lotus recap this week as well. That like, I don't know if you experience this in particular, Grace. For me, when it comes to new shows, I tend to like not exactly be jonesing to watch it week to week. Mm-hmm. Unless I'm covering it, usually I'll like save up a backlog or a repository until I find out essentially like, is it worth checking out? And then if I do, then I'll sort of pile through it. That's what happened with The White Lotus, and that's what happened with The Crown as well. But once I started it, I really enjoyed it. Now look, I am not saying this should be my way to digest the history of England to the letter, but I think that like the general summation of things that were happening at the time, I really enjoyed. You know, I didn't know about things like the fog. I didn't know about the landslide that happened in the coal town. And so to find out about it through fictional circumstances is obviously not ideal compared to a history book, but I think is better than nothing.
But is anybody really watching the show? I think we said this in episode 1. Like, nobody is like going and being like, well, I guess I know the history now. And they like walk away from the TV.
Wikipedia.
You like Wikipedia. I saw a tweet the other day that was like, I'm watching The Crown just as it intended. Yeah. And it was like the Wikipedia page, like covering.
Multiple people sent me that tweet. They're like, I know this is you. I'm like, only way to do it. Like, of course. Yeah. I mean, with this episode in particular, I did my classic. Yeah. Did this really happen? It was crazy how much of it was true. Everything.
Yeah.
Like this is the kind of thing where it feels like it shouldn't be real. Like there's no way that there were so many interconnections in this like weirdly incestuous situation and all of it was real. So it makes sense that they would like there should be a movie, and now there is this mini movie. Yeah. There should be a movie about this because it's weird how everything was so connected.
Oh, but I mean, like, I will.
Doing research, like, are you just like, but you're not like being like, well, that's exactly how it was, you know?
No, so that's the thing. I don't take it at face value, but again, speaking to my super casualness, I'm not going to be the one to be like, I'm going to do the research. Yeah, I am helped by the fact that the person I'm fortunate enough to share a bed with will be one of those people and will be like, and we'll have also watched the episodes before me. So when we do watch it back together, she'll be like, well, actually, this is what this happened. So like, I almost don't need to fact check, but I'm also good with living in sort of the happy gray medium. That is, this is a simulation of historical events that are sort of inflated for entertainment purposes. And I acknowledge that, but I can also sort of get behind, you know, the feelings that it provides, which I think leads into my thoughts about this episode in correspondence with season 5, which I will say outright, of the three, and I've only seen three so far, this is my favorite by far. And it's because for me, interestingly enough, and you know, don't at me because I know people will come in being like, certainly opinions have been prevailing of The Crown is the best when it's about the royal family. I low key love the episodes that are not about them whatsoever. Fagin, the season 4 episode, is one of my favorites, to be completely honest. I think it's because, again, I don't necessarily have access to what British society was feeling at the time. And then I'm just super curious as to, like, what were people saying about the royals? Grace, you and I talked about this a lot when we were covering House of the Dragon. I know it's a bit of a false equivalency, but, like, yeah, we hear all these things that people in King's Landing saying, like, yes, well, the land won't support a female queen. And it's like, right. Well, I'll take your word for it, I guess. We haven't heard from anybody there. And so I like the moments where we get to kind of, you know, consort with those that are outside of the sphere just to see exactly how they're perceived coming from a culture as, again, a dirty American swine who does not bow down to a king. That's why we, back in 1776, we kicked him in the keister. So when we have an entire episode,
how dare you?
That is
we're monarchs on this pun.
Yeah,
we're part of the Commonwealth. Yeah, come on.
Exactly. And this is like the equivalent of, to use another British property, like Love Actually. I'm like the Billy Bob Thornton American president coming in, just being a boorish pig. But that's why, another reason why I really enjoyed this type of episode is, to your point, it is perhaps the most separate storyline that's ever been experienced on this show, period. But it was such an interesting story. And I loved how it tied back to the plot of the royals. And I think to me just signifies like how important that moniker was globally and how different it was that in a show that's been wholly about like gaining power from a political perspective, this is a guy that's trying to gain power almost from like a business perspective. And to see the similarities and differences therein, season 5 had not really caught up with me onto that point. I think I honestly can't garner an opinion about any one of the recastings except maybe Elizabeth Debicki, just because we've seen so little of them. I love Jonathan Pryce in general.
Yeah, same.
So, I thought he had a good episode last time, though I feel like he's still kind of missing a bit of that snark that we get from Philip in his previous two instances. So, even though that unfortunately is not a problem solved in this episode, like, I cannot poo-poo a well-told story. And in my opinion, this is a well-told story about a factor that about the show that I've always appreciated, which is, ironically enough, everything outside of the Crown proper.
Yeah. Yes. I think, Sean, it'd be interesting to hear your take on this episode. Very quickly, I'll just remind folks, postshowrecaps.com/The Crown. Make sure you don't miss an episode, a podcast of our coverage of the show. Write and review. All that stuff is very much appreciated as we continue to go through the episodes. Yeah, but this episode about Mohammed Al-Fayed, who has this encounter with with Edward, the Duke of Windsor, many years ago. Then he marries, and he's now this business owner, and he purchases the Hotel Ritz Paris. He hires on Sidney Johnson, who was worked for Edward, in sort of this very intrigued by Edward and his, you know, being royal and British culture. And so he hires on Sidney, but also sort of like gets him to train him in British culture in the same way that Sidney was trained. It's very interesting. Mohammed purchased Harrods, a department store. They financed the film Chariots of Fire. And after the Duchess of Windsor's death, he buys the Windsor's Parisian villa, names it Villa Windsor, restores it, invites the queen to come. They basically come to just take back stuff that they think belongs to the crown. Sidney Johnson then dies a little bit later. And finally, at the Royal Windsor Horse Show, Mohammed Al-Fayed tries to buy a seat next to the queen and ends up sitting next to Diana. Diana is also introduced to Dodi Al-Fayed, who will become important. Shannon, yeah, what do you think of this? It's very much, I think, the thing you were saying of like these like mini movies.
Yeah.
This one feels like more than any other episode I can think of. It's like, yeah, because it's like, yeah.
Well produced, I should say, much like the Al-Fayed proper.
Yeah, well, maybe it will win an Oscar just like Chariots of Fire. So,
yeah. I mean, this is completely TV movie. Usually the mini movies we see on The Crown are about someone from The Crown. It's like this like period of time in their life. This is tangentially related to The Crown, I think, at best. But I think that there's points to that, which I'll talk about. I mean, obviously the whole theme of the episode is outsiders, to the point where they explicitly stated, because on season 5, we have to state what we mean. And like, this one wasn't super heavy handed. It was like,
yeah, what'd you...
outsider.
Mike, what do you think of Elizabeth as a boat? What do you think of that?
Exactly.
Metaphor?
Like a subtext does not exist in the Crown nowadays. Like you said, literally, Doty leads home to his father and he goes, this movie is about the outsider becoming an insider. And you can tell, like, he's making slight eye contact with the camera at the time to be like, you understand? You get the allegory?
Did you miss the wink? Yeah. Because so then they like cut to Sydney. I was like, you know what? We would have got it anyway. We've talked about this. This has been like an ongoing trend in the last like two seasons of them like being a little heavy handed with it. But yes, it's about outsiders, which I thought was like kind of an enjoyable time because obviously like at its purest, the thing that connects all of these characters is being an outsider from obviously Muhammad and Doty to what's going to be like Princess Diana, who's always been an outsider, obviously to Sydney, to various degrees, but like even Edward is an outsider. And then like, I feel like we as viewers became the outsider too. Like we can't even get to the characters that were meant to be.
That's so true.
Like we're even kept from them. And it's frustrating as well for us because we're part of like all these pursuits to like get close to the royal family and it's shifted every single time because it's never going to happen. And we're like put in that position where we're outside of them. So in terms of it being so separate from the royal family, I think that really worked thematically. But on like a kind of surface level, and I'm sure we'll get into the themes, from a seasonal perspective, like where are we going to with the characters? How are we getting to know them? That's probably like a bit of its own issue. And we can talk about like, even are there any like similar episodes that have really had nothing to do with the royal family? Like maybe the Fog episode, but like even the ones I feel have been very separate have at least been about like the prime ministers who are a big part of like the cast if they're not a big part of the family. So it was super, super separate, but does what The Crown does better than probably most shows, which is do the mini movie thing really well and create these like complex characters that they actually give layers to in such a short amount of time and make you invested in so, so quickly. Like that's always been the thing that they're incredible at doing to the point where it's like, wow, I didn't think I'd care about like Charles the Welsh tutor and now I would like take a bullet for him. So they were very good at doing that. The characters I thought were instantly compelling and I thought had interesting layers that I think will bear out and the way that you interpret it will actually be important to what ends up happening with Diana and then obviously more central to The Crown. So interested to get into those themes, but I really enjoyed it. I would agree. I enjoyed it the most of the three. Where it sits in the season might become like a more interesting topic because it's so separate, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
See, I think I really liked it. I think it's better than The System, but I don't know if it's better for me than Queen Victoria Syndrome. Even like I'm making fun of the like Queen as a Boat, but I also really love it. and that is so much about where I think that the issue I sort of have is not with this episode, but it's where it's placed. And obviously the show gets a little bit stuck sometimes in where things can happen because of how they happened in real life. And so I can't fully say like, well, you should just put this one on episode like 7, you know, because, you know, you might not be able to do that depending on like the plot points that you're actually trying to use, like the Duchess of Windsor dying, right? Buying the villa, all things that you want to happen at a certain, that did happen at a certain point. I like it as this like character difference. The only problem I'm having is that I do feel like we are like the scene at the end of episode 1 is John Major like looking out the window and being like the old people are out of touch and the young people are like out of control. And I was like, okay, that's like the theme of the season clearly is like is that he's looking in. And I just feel like we haven't really like gotten there with any of the stuff that's actually happening.
We have not seen him since.
Yeah, with The Crown. And so that's what I is a totally standalone episode. This actually be a very memorable episode to me. And I actually, to the point of like being able to very quickly make us, you know, you would take a bullet for the Welsh tutor. I don't know that I'm taking a bullet for Muhammad Al-Fayed. By the end of the episode, when he's sitting with Diana, I'm like, this is pretty freaking cute. I think it's really great.
No. Let me one up this. I'm gonna put out like a big I don't know if this is a huge hot take, but in my opinion, Sidney Johnson may be the most morally good character we have ever seen on The Crown.
An extremely low bar, to be fair.
I mean, we
see, clears, you know, easily.
He does work for a Nazi.
Well, that's not his fault, though.
I guess so.
Extra scene of Edward being like, oh, yes, and you must do after it. And if you just want to throw up a Heil Hitler while you're walking by, like, that'd be right nifty.
No, I agree. Yeah, Sidney Johnson is... one thing I found, you know, the other is Shannon about this episode that there are others. I think it's very funny because I think that there's been a little bit of shift, I think probably since I don't know since when, But Mohammed being like British culture, British, like that is like the high, the highest of highs of culture and society, and like wanting to be like learn how to be like British. And they're talking, you know, they do like the tea training and the books you have to read and all this stuff. I do feel like British culture has taken a smidge of a hit, maybe in the last like 20 years. I don't know that like the most like fancy culture I would like attribute to. Apologies to all Brits who are listening, but I don't know that I would be like, yeah, it's British culture. Even where they live, like France, I'm like, I feel like French culture is classier, but that's just me. But I love that of him trying to learn how to be British.
Well, it probably also speaks to like the modernism that is meant to be a theme of this season, and like how much we even care about like high society cultures, like a regular modern society anymore as well. So it makes it a little bit of a dinosaur, but he cares about it. And there's something that you said about like where we need to put episodes that are constrained by time. But I felt like this was very much not constrained by time because we go through decades of his life. Like anything could happen at any point other than the fact that he has to meet Diana, which is going to be the thing, which I'm sure was like heavily fictionalized. So it probably could have happened at any time. And he probably kind of knew her through society, through the fact that he owns Harrods and she awfully like shopping and apparently like kind of knew him in that through the 80s. So it was an interesting thing to put it here. I think what we're doing when we're going through like the episodic recaps is like we're really enjoying this thing, but we don't know how it's going to bear out in terms of like looking at the season overall. Like, do we feel like we're catching up to the characters, which was the thing that we said for the last episode, which even did include some characters from The Crown. And even then we were like, are we going to get to know like this interpretation of the character? So I think that's the kind of thing we'll have to look back on at the end of the season to be like, were we catching up from the beginning? Because they spent so much time in these very like singular focuses very much away from what's meant to be like the central concept of The Crown. In saying that, as we look at it episodically, I think we all really enjoyed it. And I do think that the underlayers will reveal things that I think will be very important to The Crown, or at least like have interesting ramifications for The Crown. Like, as an example, like it's all going to be about obviously like Diana and Dottie's relationship. So just seeing something like this, you can look at it as like, are they these like pure outsiders who connect from being like on the outside looking in? Is this a ploy from Mohammed? Like seeing the kind of person that Mohammed is, which is this like power hungry megalomaniac. And I think that there were great layers given to his character that didn't like deify this person as just like the pure outsider. Seeing that it's like, does he use Dottie as a ploy to gain power with Diana? Like, is that a power grab? I think that's something that you can look at that makes the whole thing more nefarious. Like looking back at like his relationship with his first wife, Dottie's mother, is that like this cute younger romance, which is how you might see it at first. But when I was kind of like rewatching parts of it, I'm like, you know, it seems like she was in a powerful family. I've since Wikipedia'd that and found that to be true. Like, is this a business thing for him? Is this a business proposition? Is Diana a business proposition for him because she was such a commodity basically for society? So I think that the fact that they really create these complex layers to the characters, not just making them like an endearing, like fully endearing person, like there are conflicts there that I think are true of actual life, which we can talk about. I think that that has interesting ramifications for what will be important to The Crown going forward, specifically to Diana.
Well, what I'll also say is I do feel like this episode brings up a dynamic of the royal family and specifically their reputation that frankly has gone a little unmentioned and unrecognized on the show, which is the plight of those that are not white within British acquired places. I think that's one thing that I also really appreciated was that it was largely a BIPOC story, right? That this is the story of an Egyptian immigrant trying to work his way into the system with help of someone who had come from what, Barbados, I believe, is where Sydney ended up getting sort of like taken on by Edward.
Bahamas, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So I really appreciate that. And again, obviously a little heavy-handed, right, with like them trying to get into the Westminster Horse Show and like having to be checked for their RDs while here are these two white guys just like brushing them aside. But I really appreciate it because like, as much as people talk about, you know, is this show doing the royal, painting the royal family in a good light or a bad light, like, listen, I watched the Oprah interview. I know that there's some like some not so good stuff going on when it comes to discrimination, when it comes to behind the scenes of the royal family. And I do feel like that has been a detail that has been, for lack of a better term, a bit whitewashed when it comes to depicting the history of the royal family. And so while obviously a not like exact one for one thing, I do appreciate them sort of like talking about discrimination in this way. And I think being able to incorporate a part of the world into their world that up to this point had not really been acknowledged.
Yeah, I think I was thinking about this. I remember there's this Twitter thing going around where there was a call-in show and somebody was calling in about Rishi Sunak and saying, well, he's not really British. And then the commentator being like, well, can you like baiting them, right? Well, can you explain what you mean? And eventually it came out, it was like, well, yeah, he like doesn't look like he was born in Britain. And I think that like it's obviously still a problem, obviously, with everything that happened with like with Meghan. But you know, having this Prime Minister Rishi Sunak being the first non-white Prime Minister of Britain, it's still like racism is a huge problem, especially when you think about the reason why they end up like Edward is fully like imperialism like nonsense stuff, right? Like so that's how they get connected. You talk about like it's starting to be all these like it's wild that there's so many of these connections, and I just think like it's so interesting, like the only Muhammad, even with all of the money in the world, like right, like when he buys the villa and he's just saying like, yeah, I'll spare no expense to refit this villa, he's which is very funny that it comes like two episodes after Elizabeth, like, please, can I have money for my yacht? Yeah. And he's like, you're being like, yeah, as much money for Villa Windsor. And she's like, I don't want it. Like, I don't care. I don't, why would I go there now? And so this, I think the one thing I'm trying really hard to parse is like, part of me is like, it doesn't really feel like, you know, it, like, you know, it's not the people from the crown that I'm normally like thinking we're going to follow. And at the same time, I want to acknowledge that, like you're saying, it is about a group of people who are like, specifically not part of the crown, right? And any all the money in the world would not make Muhammad Al-Fayed part of the crown, right? So I think it is a very, I think, an important episode in terms of examining, like, I think all the stuff that he's also trying to like buy his way into British culture, right? He's like buying a department store. It's like putting money into a movie. Like he's putting all this money into just like wanting to be British and obtain a power, which is like cynical, but also like, how else does he do that? You know, how else do you become like British, you know?
Well, you don't. I mean, I think that's a big part of like the racism. And I don't think that like having their IDs and everything checked is heavy handed. I think that that's probably pretty light for what the racism actually like was at the time. And I thought it was interesting to obviously see the racism at different levels, and that Muhammad is like originally racist to Sydney in and of itself. Yeah. Like he's trying to get into this culture that hates him. Right. And I think what a big part of that like racism and xenophobia is what he still hasn't learned and what he might never learn is that it's not what you do, it's who you are. So you can keep achieving things over and over and think like, well, like that other white guy who owned Harrods did that, and then he like got an audience with the Queen, but you can get to all these levels that other people do and it's still never going to be enough. So obviously the crown and the royals are like very much the villains in that we're not even on their side. Like not that, like not even on like emotionally on their side, like we're not on their side of the story, but seeing it from the other aspect that really, really makes them out to be as nefarious as possible. So I did like it turning the tables on that. I mean, if you're going to have the most external episode to the crown, it should be for a reason. And I think there were thematic reasons here. Well, how do the other side live? The other side being like racially, socially, in every single way, how are they kind of kept out from what we've been giving an insider tour of? Like we've watched the crown for four seasons and been like on the inside track of that, and now we're being kept from it like some of the other characters are. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I also, you know, thinking of the fact that he buys Harrods two episodes after they make fun of shopping, thinking of the fact that he does so much to give like honor and reverie to Edward of all people, and they hate Edward. Like he's like, this is like a gift to the family, and they're like, we hate that guy. Like we just are trying to like take away his like most terrible documents so that they don't like see the light of day. And he's like, this will be an amazing thing. Like he thinks it's incredible that Edward just like was a king. He doesn't realize like the shame and the fact that, again, Edward has been made an outsider in and of himself. So like how can you not be on the path of trying and just getting knocked back with this character that we're following the whole time, even though I think, as we'll talk about, there were layers to that character. So when you think about like the theme of why they would make this so like such a special episode and so different and so unique and so external, like I think there's a lot of narrative reason for that.
But also, I mean, I feel like that last scene ish specifically of Elizabeth saying, can you go sort that out? Like, I'm not going to sit next to him. Is like, I feel like, you know, it's really...
Clairefoy would never.
I'm trying to think, is it the first time that the show is actually kind of saying like, yeah, Queen's a bit racist.
Like, well,
you know?
I don't know. Was it that or was it Porchy? It seemed like she was okay with it until she saw Porchy, which off screen.
No.
Hashtag recast.
Yeah, I was excited to see the new Porchy. And then
see the third stage Pokemon Porchy, personally.
I mean, yeah. I think it's like the implicit bias that we talk about. Like, yes. Can we like quantify exactly how much? Like, she sees this person, she doesn't feel connected to that person. She's like, no, if that person was white, she might have been more, you know, tempted to do it. And she probably also wants to hang out with Porgy. Like, all these things are true, but he's just not a consideration to her and never will be, especially because she has been so rude to him so many times. And like, yeah. For him, it would be like something that he could really tell is like a focal point of his life. Like, this is how the royal family have treated me. Like, this is where, and like, she has to be reminded, like, who even is that guy? Like, that's another big point of this. Like, he's like a nobody to her. There's so many people who are like on the outside of this that are just like, these are relevant people to the crown. And we just spent like an hour with them. And I think it wasn't like important to see that perspective.
It's kind of like Mr. Burns and Homer Simpson. Constantly looking for recognition. I really love that as well, because again, that's a perspective that I think we kind of take for granted, spending so much time within the inner circle. Like you said, I love the disparity between Muhammad being like so inspired to take on this entire cause by Edward, the like disgraced former Nazi, being the one
disgraced or dead.
Both, I guess. But him essentially coming in and him being like, okay, this is officially what I want to do with my life. When clearly, like, he has no glimpse, nor should he really. Again, like, he had such an outsider's perspective that his dad literally had to describe to him who he was. But it really was the spark that lit this long fuse of like, is what I want to eventually do. I will acquire all these properties, do all these things to try to get into your good graces, when he doesn't necessarily know what we know upon 4+ seasons of watching this, which is all these inner dynamics, why they do and don't like each other. And it's definitely a privilege that is afforded to those who are born into it versus those that have to work their way up to it. And it's so interesting the way that Dodi regards the monarchs as gods, in a manner of speaking. And this is, seen a lot, especially when we get into like Elizabeth's coronation, right? Back in season one, like all the religious iconography and all the ceremony behind it, it has always been linked when it comes to the monarchy. And so it's really interesting, especially in this day and age, when we have moguls and businessmen making very audacious grabs for power, to watch them like have this ambition to do so. And again, like you said, like, you sympathize for him, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, but you just kind of just want credit. Like, your goal is just to become royalty at the end of the day. That's why you're doing all these things. And it's so interesting to watch this man try to essentially make his way in through doing all these things, because that's what he's been raised and personally believes based on his own background, facing up against these people that have all been born with the silver spoon in their mouth. He's trying to like trade up to get the silver spoon and try to put it in his mouth.
It is wild, to the point of the like how they're all actually connected, Shannon, that like, it to a degree, I mean, we're not spoiling who dies, but it will cost him a lot in terms of how actually connected he does get. I think it's really interesting to think whether his conversation with Diana, how much of that is like, how quickly, because it feels genuine, but like, how quickly can he actually like turn on sort of charm? Or there is a reason why I think you know, I don't think you get rich for no reason all the time. I don't mean that as a like, as long as you work hard, you'll get really rich. Like, some people are like, obviously have an advantage, but like, yeah, he's like a charming like dude. And so he like, when Diana sits next to him, he can do that.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time. No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Shannon, you and I have talked about like very, very heavy-handed dialogue of the it's not the prime minister's son who's lost, yeah, it's ours. I gotta say, out of the acorn of a simple kindness, an oak tree of happiness will grow.
That was really bad.
It's pretty heavy-handed. It's really heavy-handed. Like, this is the thing about like whether you're watching the show, like what if you don't know any of the stuff that's happening? Like, I feel like you're supposed to. Like when Dodi and Diana meet, it's like, yeah, it's like awkward thing. But the whole thing is you're like, oh, they're gonna be together. You know, it's like that's the thing. Yeah, they're gonna get together. Yeah.
It's if Margaret was watching being like, well, that's just a nice drive off into the sunset.
That's how the mini movie ends. Like, it's all a lovely, happy ending. But I think, you know, okay, well, to spoil like some of what's going to happen, I do think it's interesting that firstly, they will get in that.
Yes.
Dottie's going to be with Diana.
Yes.
Which, as you're saying, the first part of that is that that's what cost them everything. That's how they die. But the second part being like, I could even imagine that like, because Diana is like a villain to the royals, so it's going to be like, are we finally in? Are we finally in with the queen?
Right.
And it's going to be like Edward. It's like, how do you keep picking the people we actually dislike the most in this family? Like, we're absolutely not on board. And I feel like he's going to think, we made it to the royal family. Like, even if it's this like divorced person, but she is like the mother of the heir. And they're still going to be like, we actually hate you more now because you're like connected to this thing. So I thought what was really interesting about it, and I'd love to kind of get our takes on all of the different characters that we were introduced to and got to know so well over the hour. But for Muhammad, again, like at its most pure, you're extremely connected to him. We're on his journey. We're very much on his side. What I liked about it as well is that it's not just this like perfect person. Sydney comes across, I think, like as this like angelic person, but for Muhammad, there are like complexities in that I think preempt things, or definitely preempted what I eventually Wikipedia'd, which was like, he was an eccentric man. He's our hero of the story, but he's like this very flawed person, even in what we see, like his own racism.
He's canceled. He's definitively canceled.
Well, in terms of like the show itself, he's racist. He then like marries this woman who's like decades his junior and seems to be like ignoring her. He's like not an amazing father. He's this like megalomaniac. So like, even as what we know of him, we're like, we're on the ride and we're like, oh, Muhammad, but we like know that he's like, he's a little out there. And then like for what's to come in terms of like the history of it all, like he's well known for like the conspiracy theories he had around their death and like that being a big thing. So like the eccentricities that he had in that. Then there's some like extreme like sexual assault and harassment charges that he has. I don't know that we would have like specifically known that note, but I feel like as what we know of him as our protagonist, like, you're not like, I was actually upset to read that on Wikipedia. I was like, Muhammad, why? But I think that like of what we are introduced to about him, it's not so shocking. We're like, yeah, this was like a very flawed, very complex man, and there's a lot going on in that. So I think that it informs what's going to happen. Like, how pure can we see this later connection that's going to happen with Diana and Dottie? Is it a ploy? Is it this like manipulative thing? Because so much of that of what we saw is that for Muhammad, or is it this like pure outsider thing? Because both of those things were given so much like valid weight in the episode.
Well, I was thinking about the show at some point. Like, I think I said this in one of the preview pods of like, is the show going to like tackle like Andrew at all ever in this stuff, knowing what's happened in real life? Because yes, it's not like it's like come out until now, but you would presume that like things are happening.
The kids episode, they're like, I'm really worried about Andrew. That's not going in a great direction. Super concerned about that. Yeah.
He's also, I think, the one in the first episode of the season that's like the most like when they're like outside, like I think there's allusions to that as well. So yeah, like how much will they like touch on that? Like it does, because yeah, it's very interesting because I you know, we literally see him being racist. He wants to dismiss like Sydney from working at the thing until he realizes that he's connected to Edward. But there's a way that you can like write that as like he's being racist because it's what he thinks will like, and I'm not excusing it, but he thinks it'll get him into like British society, right? He's like, that's what he has learned until he realizes that this man is connected. So there's ways in which like some of his worst behavior in this episode is very much like you can understand it a bit more than maybe some of this other stuff that is like not brought up. So yeah, that is, I mean, we were talking last episode about how like about like, because we were joking about whether the show is like Survivor or not, but like, yeah, Muhammad Al-Fayed got a pretty, I think he'd be pretty happy coming out of the show with like with his edit.
Well, considering that, I mean, the first time I really like remember the name Mohamed Al-Fayed was, I'm not sure if you remember this, Grace, is like one of the sports minded people. So he owns a football team. And there wasn't there a scandal where like he put up a statue of Michael Jackson?
Yeah,
and, like,
that was on
after all the Finding Neverland stuff broke, and he's like, "What?"
People did not like that statue. People tried really hard to get rid of it, and he was like, "No, the statue is amazing." Like, it seems like the statue was like a really big part of the Wikipedia page, even everything.
Yeah. So I think that almost like describes the way that Muhammad is personified in this episode, which is surprisingly naive. I think back to when they take the abdication desk, and they're like, oh, well, you know, the queen would consider it a really nice gift if you gave back all these papers that might reveal a lot of personal secrets. And he does. And Sydney's like, oh, I'm sorry. They're kind of piece of shits. And he's like, no, don't you understand? The queen considers it a gift. That he is kind of so deluded and has blinders on to having this goal of getting in the good graces of the queen. That despite being this like rather shrewd businessman, I mean, you see the pitch that he makes to the Ritz person, right? Like simultaneously negging them while also accusing them of discrimination. Like, the man has a net worth for a reason, but at the same time, he is surprisingly like okay and fine with being told, as long as it's coming from Buckingham Palace, like he'll swallow it. He'll swallow that medicine. And so it's interesting when Diana comes in and kind of sits down and says, yeah, this is all kind of like a crock of BS, right? And he's like, oh, okay, now I understand. Yes, finally I get it. Now the dream has kind of been broken, but also remade in a different way.
Well, I think also there's this interesting thing that keeps happening in this episode where he gets some of what he wants, but not all of it. So when they come to visit and he's like, what does he say? The mountain is really moving to Muhammad. He's like so thrilled. And it's like the worst royal visit of all time. They just come to get like pearls, letters from Nazis, the desk, you know, they're just going to take this stuff and leave. Thanks very much. Bye. And he's like pretty, like, he's like fairly chummed about the, like, the meeting. The thing with Diana, you can watch that scene. She's like full on calling him a creep. Like, he's like,
that's Diana's charm. She'll call you a creep and you'll ask for more.
But like, so like, none of it like goes exactly how he wants it, but it's like, whatever, you get this little bit of attention and it's like, that's like, it's worth it. This is the whole thing is worth it, you know? So I think it's very interesting that like, he doesn't really, does he ever get anything he fully, like, anything he can actually buy? He can get Harrods and he can get the Hotel Ritz Paris, but he doesn't actually get what like he thought would come with that, which is like actual status, actual like privilege. They win an Oscar, but like, what, you know, doesn't, you know,
who doesn't have
he
does Oscar?
They don't make the speech. He's watching like, I was like, oh, he's gonna watch this, I don't, you know. And it's not, it's like the, you know, it's not him making this, it's not any of them making the speech, right? So they get these like morsels of what he's hoping for, and it's like just enough to keep trying, right?
Well, I think like what he's going to get is going to be Diana, as we spoke about. And I'm sure that that's not going to be enough in and of itself. The scene that really did speak to me as well was, you know, the comparison of how both Sydney and he are grappling with the visit to the castle, because I like, the way I saw that was not like a morsel. Like, I saw that as a very, very disrespectful affront. Like, if you think about how much time and energy and money they put into restoring this thing as what he says is a gift to the palace. Again, like, they're definitely naive. Like, they're not into it, but he's doing this like for the specific reason to get an audience with the queen and to be appreciated for this thing. And the visit is so mean. Not only that, like, it's not even they send like Margaret, like, you know, like on the queen's behalf and like make it a bit of a thing. Like, they're literally there to take away the things. Like, they would have preferred that he probably just leave it there.
Yeah,
in disrepute, just not, you know, let's never think about it again. But now that he's made it a whole matter, they have to go deal with the thing. There's all of these problems. Like, it's been a worse thing. So for them to come, take all the stuff, show complete disrespect, I thought what was interesting was watching Sydney and Muhammad grapple with that disrespect. Now, Muhammad has so much ego and pride that he'd never say, like, wow, I can't believe you just put years into that, everything into that, and which is disrespected to this degree. Sydney, probably because he's had it much worse, has not had the wealth, has had worse racism, was literally like, there was racism from Muhammad, even though, as you say, we see him come up, we sympathize, I guess, with parts of like how he's struggling and trying to get into this terrible system and being awful because of that. Also seems like maybe he's like not a perfect person, but then he's even racist to Sydney. Like, Sydney's had it way worse. There are layers of this. There's like a spectrum of this. And he's like transparent enough to be like, yeah, we're on the outs. That was really hard. Life kicks you down again. Whereas Muhammad is like close enough to the goal to be like, that wasn't as harsh as like as really it was, because it's like almost too much to comprehend. So the way that they both grappled with that, I thought was like one of the most interesting scenes, because it was one of the worst things that they did. The Agreed. Royal family, like, they could have shown, like, again, I think we spoke about it like last week, a modicum of respect being like such a huge, and the lack of respect being big, like a continuously huge theme of the season, and probably of all the royals, is like, even if the queen can't come out. And I do think it's funny that we're like, all he wants is an audience with the queen, which I guess is a difficult thing to have, but like, they really worked hard, and you could have sent Anne, you could have sent Margaret, you could have sent someone to like represent it and for the purpose to be a positive thing, but it wasn't even for that. It was literally just like, what can we as the royals gain from this? So yeah, I thought that was a very interesting scene at the end.
Well, yeah, especially because, you know, you look at what do they know about them? And we have, again, experienced 4 seasons of like, unless it's something that directly applies to them or like something in the news about the state, they don't really care about it. And there's this really interesting shot of just like a series of headlines about Muhammad Al-Fayed buying Harrods. And it's just like little quick headlines that are at like the bottom of, I don't know, page 2 of the newspaper or something. And that's really all you need to know, right? That like, it might just be a throwaway thing for them to find out. It'll just be a random tweet that shows up on their metaphorical timeline, and they're just going to keep scrolling. They're not going to engage with it whatsoever. So yeah, when they find out like, oh yeah, this random businessman bought the place of the man that you don't like, they're like, yeah, okay, it doesn't really matter.
What's in it for me as well?
Exactly. And that's the thing as well, is that they really were about to shrug it off until they found out about the abdication papers, right? Because otherwise, right, it would have gone to France, I think, because that's where technically they were living before they were exiled once again. And so once they sort of found out, okay, this is something that directly applies to us, we have to save our own skin, but let's do it in like the coldest, most distant way possible, as latter day Queen Elizabeth does. I think it's a perfect representation again of like, the only way to really get an audience with the queen is to fake in it and sneak your way into Buckingham Palace and sit at the foot of her bed. That's honestly all you can do, because at this point they cannot be bothered, especially this stage of, you know, her reign, when she has so much under her, so many things that she's gone through. She's not exactly the nubile Claire Foy that would be able to be like, sure, I'll sit down. Her naivete has gone out the window.
Yeah, she's, can you deal with this place? Go. Yeah. I think too, the difference between like Sydney and Muhammad there when at the end, but when Sydney dies as well, the way like Muhammad, I think, you know, talking about like who's rootable from this episode, I do think it's like absolutely Sydney is like the most, yeah, he's the best. But the way Muhammad acknowledges him is like making a grip that says like valet to the king, which like,
I hope he means Edward. Yeah.
No, well, that's the thing, right? That goes back to the first conversation they have where he goes like, oh, valet to the king, which I guess is some sort of like Egyptian inside joke. To that point about the mini movie, like this was the consummate end to like the Green Book-esque narrative.
I agree.
This guy didn't like this. He turned away this server, but it turned out to be the closest connection he ever had in his life. I will say, though, one of the things that also really drew me in this episode were the performances. I always love how The Crown impeccably cast performers that, like, have you sympathize with these one episode characters that you've been talking about in the recaps. Salim Daw, I think, was really great as Muhammad. And even though he hasn't done a lot so far, I was happy to see Khalid Abdallah there. The Kite Runner was one of my favorite books reading in high school. I enjoyed the movie well enough, but he was definitely someone that really stuck out to me. I mean, he was also on United 93. So when the mustachio Doty showed up, and I really liked this scene that he had with his dad as well, right? When he does the like, dad, I don't want to be a businessman, I want to go into making movies. I thought he was able to like garner some initiative there and actually showcase a character as well. That's again, obviously going to become very important in later stages.
Well,
in terms of Sydney, I want to kind of talk through both Sydney and Doty, who are so important as characters in this. Like for Sydney, of the Green Book of it all, which I agree with, I definitely saw like some criticisms again and like briefly browsing the Reddit about how like this trope where it's, you know, what we know him as a character is in relation to how he helps everyone else, and it becomes like about what he can serve, literally. I mean, that he is like a subservient, but like what he can serve for others. So I think at its best and at its purest, and what I really did enjoy was where he connects to the theme of outsiders. And like, obviously he's this character that we're supposed to like and that we really, really do. And that we see again in its purest form, this relationship grow with Muhammad when he's sick. Muhammad serves him, puts the shoes out, is like tending to his grave. I think Valley of the Kings was like a pure thing for Edward. I don't think he was trying to say, I mean, it was Valley of the Kings. I think it was a Valley of the Kings metaphor, play on words there. But I think that it was about Edward and not necessarily trying to talk himself up as a king. And it's a good pure thing. The criticism that you can have, obviously, of where he is in the episode is like this well-worn trope of where he fits in relation to everyone else. I think what's unfortunate is that like that would have been his role in life. Like it probably is authentically showing, at least in like the central part of the story, which again does make more sense to come from Muhammad and Dottie's perspective of how it's going to relate to the crown, as much as Sydney like strangely interacted with so many of these things with the royals throughout history and that was actually authentic. It's going to be central about Muhammad and Dottie, and it's going to be about what was truly like his relationship in serving them and Edward. So I love the inclusion. I think it's worth talking about, yeah, how they portray him in that way and some of the criticisms that might be had about that. But yeah, I did think that they did some parts of that really well, showing like his reaction to the extreme racism, the fact that Edward is like, I didn't know if I'd like him because he's from the Bahamas and I don't like the Bahamas and he's connected to the Bahamas for me, like in itself is like so xenophobic and racist. Like he might not get a job because he reminds you of a bad place that has nothing to do with him. That's like the reason that was bad for you. So I think they showed in small ways, and I think the acting took it a long way to show his plight in this way, but still so much of it like narratively was in relation to where he was like secondary to other people and how he served other people. So I think that it did pretty well with that while falling into parts of those tropes.
Yeah. I think again, like if, as we're talking about, like, this is not a, like, you know, Queen Elizabeth and company sort of story. I do think it is kind of cool that we get like a Sidney Johnson story, essentially, in, even if it's in the middle of the Muhammad Al-Fayed story.
Yeah.
That Sidney does get like, yeah, recognized as like, yeah, what a unique thing. Position he was at that, yeah, he, you know, I joke that like the only thing that like is a splotch on his resume is like who he worked for, but yeah, what choice does he have? Like he gets, you know, and Edward also like gives him, you know, he, you know, this is terrible, but like he brings him to Britain and then to France to like come work for him, you know, which is like, you know, could have totally changed his life. So yeah
I it's really interesting because I love the in show like thematic nature, right? That like this is a man who loves to serve, which is a problematic trope in and of itself. But I think if we're looking at the character proper, like I love the imagery of the first time we see young Sidney, right? You know, letting Edward out of his car, he has these like regal red tie and tails on. And then for the majority of the episode, he is not for various reasons. And then finally, when they remake Villa Windsor, he is back in it. And finally, it feels like returning home, I think, for him. And that's where he sort of ends up dying. I just thought it was a really interesting relationship between him and Muhammad. You know, even looking at when Sidney does, of course, another tropey thing, right? Whenever a character coughs on a TV or movie, you know what's going to happen eventually. Though I still think they don't know how Sidney ended up dying.
Yeah, from vaguely coughing.
And so it's interesting, though, that like when he was feeling unwell, you see Muhammad like brings him tea, right? Like tends to him when he's in bed, which is super interesting. Compare that to like the plight that might befall some of the footmen of the royal family. There's no way that they're bringing their own tea to serve their other people. And so that's interesting. And that speaks towards, again, Muhammad sort of like pull yourself up by your bootstraps type of thing, that he went from selling Coca-Cola on the streets of Alexandria with his two brothers 30 years ago. Like you never really lose that part of you, no matter high up you get in the chain, especially if it is someone who is considered family for him. I mean, you could argue from their depictions in this episode that he had a more familial relationship with Sidney than he did with Dottie at this point in time.
Yeah, I also really love the scene when Sidney is teaching Muhammad the like all of the customs and the back and forth between all the things he sort of learned from Edward, but then he sort of is now teaching them, right? Like when he pours the tea without using the filter and what books to read, like it's all like verbatim, right? Like that's probably very like, very like dramatized for a show. It's like the exact books he's getting them to read. But I did really like it. And also, I guess the other thing too is in his when he was working for Muhammad Al-Fayed, he was also the curator of all the like all of the collections like that were left at Villa Windsor when it was being restored, which is like cool. He wasn't just like just the servant, the personal valet for Muhammad. He also was a curator, which is really cool.
Well, he was so much more. Like, he taught him all the stuff. And that's what I feel is also really great about the dynamic, is that it's this kind of clash of hierarchy. So, like, obviously, 90% of the time, Muhammad is the person who is placed higher. He owns the hotel where Sydney is working, where he even sends him out due to racism. He obviously employs him. Like, yes, he is higher on the hierarchy. But Sydney has things that Muhammad doesn't have. That's why he's so important to him. Like, he can teach him all these things. He worked and was, like, they said, part of the family. I mean, quote unquote, but like in a way that Muhammad would love, you know, even if it is like a little bit insulting and it is in these like serving ways. Muhammad would love to have been described as family to a royal. So the fact that Sydney could teach him these things and have like the connection to higher society is something that Muhammad loves and something that puts Sydney a little higher. And I think that that's what's interesting as well from an episode like this, is those like kind of inconsistent hierarchies. When we watch The Crown, usually in the royals, there's like such a static sense of hierarchy. Like, we know exactly how it's meant to go because it's such a big part of the whole point of The Crown. It's like where everyone sits in that. Whereas something like this, when everyone's kind of on the outside looking in, they have different connections to different things that put them in different places from a racial perspective, from a social perspective, from their work and experience. It puts them in these different positions, which is a very interesting thing and a very unique thing to see on The Crown, where we don't usually see those different hierarchies. And we'll probably get into it a little bit with Diana, who is meant to be less liked, more low down, like not as important, and will be the beloved person who's the most important. And we're going to see those hierarchies, at least in the eyes of the public, really flip around and really be different. So I think it kind of introduces us to different hierarchies and different things that people can get out of dynamics and relationships.
Yeah. And also go ahead.
Well, to that point, there's the image of, again, when young, during that montage, that's so great, Grace, that you're mentioning, the like almost the makeover montage of Muhammad, when there's a sequence of, no, I think actually it's the scene where Edward officially brings him in, right? Like permanently hires him, becomes a temp to perm role. Yes. And there's this shot of Sydney like placing the shoes of Edward ever so gingerly and carefully. Mm-hmm. And what does Muhammad do after Sydney dies? He picks up his shoes and he places there. And so that's almost like a symbol of like, I regard you in the same way as you regarded Edward back in the day. You were my teacher. You were my friend. You were my mentor.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Man, what a great, the Crown is so good. that's so smart. I love that.
Yeah, I think, this is, I think, a really strong episode in terms of, like it might not have been like about the Crown characters that we've seen, but it is really just about like how specific these two people, like Muhammad and then Sydney, like it, you know, what their reality is like as they are in proximity to like colonial, you know, institutions and systems, what's it's actually like. So that, but I think this is one where like the more I talk about it, the more I like it. Sometimes that happens with podcasts. Like, it's pretty good. My one critique in terms of like going back to, you know, Diana, is the one piece. And again, this is from the like momentum aspect, is that I kind of like, as it's been a little while, I kind of like forgot that like where we end the last episode is like Diana has rocked the crown with like, with like admissions. And then the only thing we get is like Elizabeth being like, that was kind of a nice thing I did, huh? You know, maybe I'm not such a bad guy after all. Yeah, but you know, I mean, I guess they had to have like, you know, survived and lived and you know, been around each other without there being like a blow up. And Philip is the one who goes and is like, "Hey, don't do that! Like, you're messing up." But yeah,
I know. I agree. It's an odd place, given I'm gonna call it a bomb, but like certainly shots have been fired last episode with the interview that was put out. So yeah, I'm surprised that there's not really a follow-up to that. I do think, looking back, once we see the whole spectrum of the 10 episode season, like, would this have come at a better point? Because it just seems like Di's like, oh, I just got a little slap on the wrist and I have to sit with the creepy bald man at the horse show. Oh no, it's not like I like sold out the entire royal family or something, and express how terrible they were to me.
I love that she never hides how much she hates the rest of
yeah,
the
it's
family.
So outrageous. It's so outrageous. Like, so to this person who's he's
paid a lot of money.
Exactly,
he's paid a lot of money to be to sit next to the queen, and he's like, hi, I'm a hobbit. And she's like, the queen sucks, huh?
Exactly what it is. It's so brazen. But like, this is what I was shocked by this through the last two episodes, is like, because I don't feel that that's what we were getting from her in season four. No. Like, now she's like really done with it. So the last episode, that is, I think that's what some of the criticisms were of her, like not just the book, but the fact that like anyone, she would say basically, like someone could say, hey, I have a coffee for Diana, and she'd be like, screw the queen. Like, it's a lot. I agree. But like, I think that like in the small encapsulation we got of Diana, there was like good stuff there. But now that you're saying it, it's true. Like, that stuff is like, it feels frozen in time from where we were pre-book. I guess that the party line is like, she wasn't involved in the book, so maybe they're all just like playing nice with this very awkward thing. But like, yeah, we're very much back where we were even before the bomb of the book, with her being like, the royals suck, and I'll tell anyone who wants to listen about it.
Mike, did Dominic West have other obligations? There's two episodes in a row. He's just not in
the show.
He's like, oh, I've got to go film Finding Dory 2.
Do they still pay him?
I don't know.
I think he's doing British accents, by the way. I feel like that's like, as three non-Brits on this podcast. But no, Mike, please.
I also totally agree with you, Grace, from a point I think you made with LaTanya, that as someone who took in Dominic West via The Wire, like, I can only imagine him doing an American accent. It is very odd to see him just do something British. But yeah, maybe that's another reason as well. They're just like, and he went to go hide away. Though I guess, again, we only really experience her at the horse show. So maybe this is one of the examples as shown in the premiere of like, this is her version of fun, and this is not his version of fun.
She might be trying to fix the relationship, right? She's like, oh, I'll do duty for the queen. Like, I'll sit in the box seat, I don't know.
Maybe he's golfing, because we know how much Edward loved golfing instead of polo. So maybe he took after him in that way, considering how much of a father figure he was to him.
Apparently, I didn't know this. There's a interesting, that Dominic West is actually like, kind of knows Charles and Camilla. It's very interesting that they like run, he works in their like, on a charity that they're both involved in. He like opted to like step back, and they're like, no, like, you're an actor. This is what you do. Yeah. Who cares if you're playing me? Yeah, it's kind of wild.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe he's like, I refuse to portray anything negative about Charles. They're like, well, we have to write Charles out of the series then, because that's the only alternative that we can have. The fact that with Diana, she comes in, she's like, well, I'm trying to get back in their good graces by bitching about them to random.
It's so funny.
Is also an amazing thing. For Diana, so much of it though does encapsulate all the things people loved about Diana. She's the first one who gives them the time of day. She's the opposite to these like bad, cold royals who have been so much the villain. She's like so charming and so nice and so natural. Like, again, like there's this, she's so genuine. She's too genuine. She's telling everyone how she feels about everything. but it's so charming. And like, this is why people loved her, because she shows them kindness. There's like such a natural rapport. How could you criticize it? But like, she probably shouldn't be doing that. I thought that was a great scene from her.
Yeah, she's so charismatic, incredibly so.
She makes the people around her more charismatic. That's how charismatic she is.
Absolutely. Again, going back to the Survivor example, like, total social beast. Now, it's interesting, though, like, seeing the way that Doty is, like, sort of introduced her, and he kind of, like, waves her off, but the final shot, right, is, like, him kind of looking back, because he also...
Lingering look, yeah.
Well, because he
that's
also
gonna end really well, yeah.
Yeah, great, exactly. Yeah. He's like, I'm gonna get in a car crash with that woman one day. But they had this really like, it's a surprisingly not cold, I would say, but like small introduction, considering that it seems like she makes a much bigger first impression with his father. But I think that also really connects to the Doty storyline, and I love the parallels that, despite the fact that the Al-Fayed family is not royal, there's a lot of similar thematic things going on there in terms of succession, in a manner of speaking, right? Like, Doty is the one that's coming forward and saying, I have money. What do you have? Muhammad put out this idea of like, you're nothing without me, essentially. And Doty's saying like, you don't realize, like, I literally speak on your behalf. I do these translations. I have to be the one to do this, and I don't want to do that. This idea of exploring identity outside of family has been the lifeblood of this show since the very beginning. And so I really like that connector here, where even though this is far from a royal family, in fact, that is their goal, to become royal, that there are still these issues that exist therein, that here is this son who his father held him. And like one of the first things he said is like, you and I will rule over this together as father and son. 30 years later, he's like, I don't want to do that. I want to go make my movies and do something else. I don't want to just follow in your footsteps the entire time.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on like what we see of like connecting to Dottie and then how he meets Diana. I think a lot of that is really interesting. The first thing can be like, yeah, how they connect together as outsiders. Again, like, yeah, that family stuff, succession, how they're perceived, how they're trying to like make their own mark and be this person. So I think there's a connection there. But at the same time, I feel like there's like a lot of differences in that she comes across as this like, again, big personality, very, very charming, kind of larger than life. And so does Muhammad. Dottie is like the one who's softer. And I kind of feel like they're put in opposition to each other when she meets him. Like he's like lower down, they're together. They have like in jokes that he doesn't understand. And he's now the outsider to their like insider thing that they've created.
Yeah, Dottie kind of has the Charles Hunch, okay, right? He doesn't have the head tilt. Maybe that's he still what kind she's of has like to. The. Yeah, exactly. Men with bad postures.
Yeah, I mean.
Scoliosis, scolio, yes.
Yeah, exactly. But so like he's someone that I think that she would connect with in many ways. Like they kind of have had like not these like fairy tale like childhoods. He loves art and creation like her. Like she's more of the performer. He does it more behind the scenes, but they connect in that way. Although obviously Charles has had that too and they could never connect on that. But he's a softer personality who would kind of, I think, give way to her as a bigger personality, where Charles was always really jealous of it. He's had to struggle for approval, as she always had as well. So there's connections there. But I also think we can see that she does connect more in this episode, obviously, with Muhammad, who is a more maybe charismatic, larger than life person, and Dodie's more in the background. And I think that that was an interesting thing to see, like, how will that be traversed to them connecting? Is it again going to be Muhammad pulling the strings? Is it going to be like this puppet master thing where that was like really the connection? Or is she attracted to someone who's that different, someone who's like seems like a gentler soul in the way that he's being portrayed, the more shy, more soft, after she's had like so many hard personalities just like really giving her nothing for so long? And does she connect on those in those other ways with someone who's a little bit different to her? So I thought, yeah, there's a lot there in just like that really minor meeting with him. And I know that people as well would be interested in this, because a lot of people don't even see him, I think, as that critical to her. Like obviously he's gonna be very critical to the story, but some people are like, oh well, she was just dating for a few months and then happened to die with him, he wasn't this like great love. Other people see it as this like big important historic relationship. So the fact that the crown would give it this importance, I mean obviously it's going to be important to the story in itself and like the conclusion of some of the Diana things and obviously like her death, but it's interesting that they would even take the time to put on that onus. But I do think as well, it is important, as we're saying, from all the themes that they've given from an outsider perspective, from some of the racial stuff that they've never really addressed, from the social status stuff that is always important to the crown. So, and it's just such an incredible story that it's so historically connected. I think that looking at it, they would think, how could we not make a mini movie about this?
Yeah, great. It's why, yeah, that's like Sydney worked for Edward, then Ghost works for Muhammad,
that's crazy.
Then Diana is with Dottie.
With
that's
Diana.
Wild.
Like that, it is crazy. How could they not?
Wild. Yeah, I think it'd be really interesting to see how both of those like relationships, like Diana and Muhammad, and also Diana will like, you know, clearly the one with that needs to like basically be established completely. Like it's like it's very little that they get, but it almost like the impression, right, between the difference between Muhammad and then his son is kind of like two things that she's sort of like looking for. In some ways, it's not like she doesn't, you know, obviously I think that they'll get into like paparazzi stuff, and that's what ends up like, I think a lot of the blame comes for her death from like paparazzi attention and all of that stuff. But like in some ways it does seem like she does enjoy the sort of like high status social like stuff of occasionally being the queen. She just also wants like, she wants to be like in on that with the rest of the royals, and they're like, they never let her in on anything. Right. But then also like she tells Charles in the first episode, like, all I want is you to like be like, you know, a caring dad and like a husband. Right. Like I want that from our relationship as well. And so it feels like she could get like that from potentially from somebody who does seem to be this more like kind of, even for like a man who's also very rich, like a more grounded individual. So I think, yeah, both of those relationships I think will be very interesting. Moving forward.
I always think back to season 4 when, you know, Charles is first courting Diana and she like has flatmates, right? Like she gossiping about it to people. And I'm just like, this feels so separate to everything we have seen in the previous 3 seasons. We don't hang out in flats, even like Tony's, you know, weird artsy studio. still felt mm-hmm. bougie in and of itself. And so I do think, despite the fact that, you know, she had a bit of titles to her, as Muhammad's going to point out with like his own connection. By the way, Grace, Acid Rain, incredible drag queen name, right?
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, it's very good. Yeah,
very Acid yeah. Betty, but I absolutely yeah. love it. But yeah. but this idea that, like, again, where she comes from is definitively more grounded than, you know, her compatriots in the royal family. And I think that shows in the way that she liaises with someone like Muhammad, who is in a very similar position, came from humbler backgrounds, rose into a much higher position. But still, again, you can't take that, you know, coke selling guy out of this big megalomaniacal businessman. And I think their connection on that level really showcases that. So to your point, Shannon, I'm really intrigued to see how Muhammad's going to play a role here. Now, what's interesting is, as we just talked about with the whole memoir biography thing, like, is this something that's going to be put on ice for a little while? We don't see Dodi or Muhammad show up until like episode 6 or 7. But it'll be interesting to see like how much are they going to be hanging around, right? Because Muhammad did this whole thing with the acquisition of Harrods of like, oh, and we'll get British citizenships, which I guess went through considering the whole Villa Windsor thing. But like, mm-hmm. I don't exactly know where they go after this location wise.
I think they're yeah. gone for a while, because she only gets into a relationship with Dodi like years from this. This is like the early, early 90s. And
that's we're in 90 or 91, I think, at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and then yeah. she's only with him for like a few months before her death. So it's going to be several years later. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's like, hey, remember those characters we introduced you to? Like, they're important again. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not even in this season. I truly think like they might have just wanted to tell this story. And I think that it was a worthwhile story to tell. And I, again, think that the Crown would want to sink their teeth into something like this for all the themes and concepts that we've spoken about. And then it will be important. And then we'll have context to it whenever it comes up, of like how that relationship comes to be and what some of the approaches and motivations might be for it. Right, so I wouldn't be surprised. I'm going to bet on it actually now. I'm going to put my money down. I don't think they come back this season.
Yeah, because I would imagine I'll put my money down on like, I think it's a finale thing. I think agree with you that
Grace,
I don't
what do you want in this?
Oh, you're going to go right in the middle, right? Like the next episode, the Sean Baya.
that's a happy terrible. Medium. No, because I think a picture perfect way to end this season would be like, the official divorce going through, and then like, wasn't the whole thing like Muhammad invites her to go to like Saint Tropez or something onto his yacht, and like that's when
so
her
long
Dodi...
from now. That's
I know, but like ages. I would imagine like that is going to be a perfect way to end the season. I know that the Crown usually doesn't do like big events to end the season, but I would imagine like you can't not have the divorce of Charles and Diana be like your big finale event. And I think having that sort of symbolize the next chapter and her unfortunately taking one step down a very perilous path would be a perfect way to end the season.
All right, let's make a bet. What are we betting? What are you willing to wager?
I was gonna say we could tweet on each other's accounts, but I don't think Twitter is gonna survive.
Yeah.
much like this. Charles and Diana.
Yeah, I think, well, hey, spoilers, I think like yeah, I don't think that we can put things about Twitter, because
I love how like cautious we're like kind of not really being at the same time about like
it's a very weird one.
It is a weird show to cover in that way. Yeah.
All right. Well, whoever loses has to tweet "I love Charles." No, you're gonna get some hate on that. All right. Well, let's think. Mike, you think of a ridiculous wager. Grace, what do you think they'll come back? You also need to bet.
Oh, then you're saying not till season 6?
I'm saying
six?
Next season, yeah.
And then you're saying the finale?
I'm saying
so
the finale,
let me give, like, what is exactly halfway of that? We're in episode 3, so,
finale?
Like, no, I think that it's too fair to, like, box Megan on just the finale, so I'm going to say,
no, I
like,
think that's funny. Let's do that. Let's
okay.
box him into the finale.
Okay, then I say before the finale.
There before we go. The finale, and Mike just gets the finale. Yeah.
And then the losers have to run barefoot down the beach, Chariots of Fire.
Oh my god, I refuse to run. I choose not to run. That's the one thing I refuse to do.
Listen, you have to complain. It is winter where Grace and I are, so.
Yeah. What about you have to make an attempt to buy Harrods?
Oh, I like that. Let's go shopping Harrods right now.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I think that's probably our episode 3 coverage, which is called Moo Moo. Did we like the name? I don't know if Moo Moo Like, it doesn't come up to the very end of the episode. I guess it's kind of cute, right? I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it's sweetest,
It's brought up as the, at least his name is brought up first, which is also interesting from a character perspective, right? The very first thing we see of Mohamed Al-Fayed is that he gets tripped in soccer and calls foul for the refs, and nobody comes to help him. Like, is that not the journey of Mohamed Al-Fayed, is that he's constantly, like, screaming into a void and nobody's listening to him?
Yeah.
I like it as well, because you're like, what is Mumu? What are we doing? And the episode is about Mohamed, as we said, even in the fact that it's like Sydney in relation to Mohammed, Dottie in relation to Mohammed, even Diana and all the royals in relation to him. So it's his episode. And I think agree. Like giving it the nickname and also like the connection to Diana, which is how we even hear about the nickname. Like it is him at his like most endearing. And like here's the journey of this person that is like we're meant to be rooting for and that like we choose to support in this way. All right. Oh, I like. Okay. So we're going to do that. We have the bet. Whoever loses has to try by Harrods. But not really try to buy
not to be like a dollar, but you could be like, I'll give you 50 grand, you know, because they'll say no.
50 grand.
Well, they'll say no, so you're fine. Oh my, right?
Yeah.
What if they don't? Like, I will give you $100,000. They're like, all right, with like, you know, COVID was hard, and you're like, oh, now I've got to buy Harrods. What a career change.
Yeah, I feel like I'm gonna have that similar meaning like they did with the Ritz of like, you've been to several banks. Look at all these credit cards you have. How many podcasts do you do? I'm going to deny this. You can't buy Harrods.
No, I think this is great. I wanted to come up in the finale, and somehow through this, Mike becomes the owner of Harrods by accident. And like, that's what I'm doing.
In 2020, Harrods was worth $2 million. $2 million.
I don't have £2 million.
I know, that's why if you offer them 50 grand, I'm like, absolutely
well,
not.
Shannon,
get out of here.
We do know someone who just won $2 million of their currency on a local Survivor season.
True.
Who? Marianne?
No, we can get Dino to buy.
Oh, Dino. Harrods. Yeah, I was like, Marianne just wanted. I mean, Marianne got more money. Marianne, I don't think, will help me buy Harrods. But I guess that would
what
be.
About
what about
Dino
would...
and Marianne?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I think that if I lose the bet, I'll probably go to all the Survivor winners I know.
Yeah, that's good.
Because Dino, like, $2 million is not even remotely.
Yeah.
Like, I met Jeremy last week. I'm just going to call in a lot of favors and be like, if we pull all our money through a wealth
that would
of
be,
different
that would
currencies.
Be its own mini movie, is a bunch of winners of a reality show buy a department store together.
That's
and
amazing.
Yet they still can't get an audience with the queen. Well, the queen is dead. Right. That one's a little unfair.
The scene where there's going to be like 15 of you all in the front row waiting to meet Charles is going to be
imagine Tony Blockos dressed to the nines ready to meet the queen, and all they get is this man being like, we're gonna have to take the desk.
Well, again, I mean, look, it's good, like we've got different currencies. 2 million rands not gonna get a ton of the way. We've got $500,000. I'll talk to Haley.
We're gonna actually like drum up all the money, and then we're gonna convert it and lose all of our money and like conversion.
It's like a challenge from the mole. Count all the money exactly.
All right, I think that's our coverage of Mumu. Mike, thanks so much for coming on.
This is so great. I have really been loving the coverage that the two of you bring. Again, like, I really appreciate the show, but I also relish sometimes when I watch shows that I don't cover, because I think, like, I don't need to think terribly deeply about it. I think the depth that the two of you bring about it is not only customary to like how excellent the two of you are as podcasters, but like really helps enrich my own enjoyment of the show. I love listening back to those recaps as well, because I kind of sped by it in a blur. So I really enjoy watching the show. Never thought I'd find myself watching it, but once I did, like, it's been incredibly good. And so I'm really excited and intrigued to see where we go from there, because we've gotten three very different types of stories in three episodes of The Crown Season 5. The Crown Season 3, I would consider a bit of a transitional season in retrospect. I don't know if Season 5 will be the same, considering what they do. But listen, as I've said before, my favorite types of stories on this show are the ones that are not about the titular people that are involved. And if that's the choice that they decide to make in Season 5, I could not be mad at this episode. I absolutely adored it, and I would not be mad at all if we continue going down that path. I'm assuming not, but I had a great time getting to watch this episode, and an even greater time getting to talk to the two of you, and an even greater time coming up with the next Hallmark movie about a bunch of reality TV winners trying to buy a luxury store together.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mike, what else are you covering? Really... Yeah, sorry, you go ahead, Jen.
No,
I'm
just thinking we really just spoiled like so many Survivor seasons for like innocent crowds.
Yeah, that's.
I was trying to be vague. I was like, Shannon, we know somebody who may have the money. And,
I'm so sorry. I hope that would be such an annoying way to be spoiled on like old international seasons of Survivor. So I can only apologize about like what a menace me and Mike are in doing that.
Listen, No, mostly you dragged me into this menacery.
I don't think that I did.
Yeah.
I don't think that I did.
Well,
I like Diana here.
What else are you covering? What else are you talking about?
Yeah, so I'm in a really interesting position from a scripted perspective. I don't really have new stuff to cover at the moment. That's going to change in a little bit towards the end of the year. But for now, I'm sort of enjoying a bit of the break. But I did have the pleasure to appear on the podcast for another show that I'm watching that is coming out with new episodes, The White Lotus. I was on the episode 3 podcast this past week with Dr. Amanda and Ariel. That was a really fun time. I've been loving The White Lotus season 2, maybe even more than season 1. I get into that more on this podcast. We get into a lot of cockamamie theories. There's a lot of fun to be had on this podcast. So I recommend you check that out. And of course, while it's not a new show, Josh and I are covering Heroes right now on Down the Hatch. We took a bit of a couple week break just due to him and I both traveling in different areas of the world. But we'll be back this coming weekend for episode 7. But reality TV is my bag at this moment, much like a nice bag from Harrods. And so I am covering Survivor and The Amazing Race in both podcast form. With podcasts, I'm doing episodic coverage with Rob and Jessica Leese for Amazing Race and The B&B with Liana Boris. And I do believe Grace Leader is going to be on this week's B&B podcast this coming weekend.
Breaking news. Yeah.
Breaking news. So very excited for that. Maybe my favorite episode of the season, much like really The good. Crown happened this past week. So excited to get into it with Grace. And then I'm also doing written coverage over at Parade.com. And we are approaching the end game with both those shows as well. The last month for both of them. So very excited to get into that. And my fingers will be typing away as we get as many interviews as possible with these future investors in the reality TV store of luxury. You can follow... Well, I could say you can follow everything I do at A Mike Bloom Type on whatever platforms exist out there. By the time that this podcast
is coming out in 2 days, what do you think is going to happen in the next couple of days?
Check Twitter on the night of Thursday, November 17th, and we'll talk more offline.
Why are things getting worse?
Wow, breaking news. Yeah, for sure.
What happened? Is it gone?
No, it's not gone.
It's not gone, but there's
we'll tell you. There's
some stuff happening. Yeah, so feel free to check out that. And thank you so much again for having me on. I had a really fun time, and I love getting to listen to the two of you talk anything, let alone a show that you're both so passionate about.
Oh, I just saw it. Twitter just alerted employees that affected immediately. All office buildings are temporarily closed and badge access is suspended. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Do you feel like with Twitter, it's like when a bar is closing?
Yeah, that's right.
And everyone's like, are we going to like head somewhere else? Are we going to like keep the night going?
Are
we just like
going
to disperse, like never see each other ever again? Because that's how I feel. Oh, I don't want Twitter to go. I'm sad now.
Like somebody who's playing out there, and so we're watching them on TV. Somebody know they're very worried. Probably they're listening. They're like, "Oh my god, I'm gonna have to invest."
I know.
Hoddards,
watch this again. There's gonna be like a Survivor 45 contestant that's like, "I knew if I played, then I have to invest in this department store."
I love
Shannon. Other than learning about the demise of Twitter, what else do you got going on?
I'm really rocked to the core right now because I kind of felt like it would never happen, and I maybe it won't. I still think we can get through it together as a community, like Twitter community that is horrible. But what do I have going on? I mean, Survivor stuff, Survivor 43, Survivor Global every week, The Crown, the show formerly known as The Crown that I'm assuming next week, next episode, we're going to see some people from the actual royal family doing some things. It's been a little bit of a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly those things. So yeah, follow me at Shannon Gates in places. It's Instagram, I guess. Yeah. Really need to like bump up the Instagram now.
I know.
Yeah.
I just had like one of my most successful tweets ever today.
Going out on a high note, you know. Like you said, you never know. This is a fun little time capsule of a show that is quite a time capsule, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Wow, I'm shocked to the core.
All right. I am on Twitter at Hi From Grace. I wrapped up our coverage of Interview with the Vampire. Our episodic coverage. We might come back with a feedback show. It's very, very good. My favorite scripted TV of all time, Dark. Just the creators of that show launched a new show today, $18.99. It all dropped. It's very, very good. I love the first episode. I've seen the first two episodes. It's tremendous television. So Rich, Ariel, and I are going to chat about that. Ariel and I also do weekly movie coverage. We cover Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. We're also covering The Menu this week with Kirk Clark. So it should be very fun. And Roll Call, a board game show over on Rob as a Podcast, the Twitch and YouTube channels. You can get some replays of all the past games. We'll have a game coming soon later this month. Yeah, I think that's it. We're all going to go figure out where we're going after Twitter, but we will
be around no matter what.
We'll for sure be back. here.
I think I'm going to like cease to exist and turn into dust when Twitter goes.
Hey, listen, there's a little place called Discord where if you have the funds to be able to throw out at least $5 a month, you get access to a lovely old forum that's not going away anytime soon, where we're talking the crowd and so many more things amongst Post-Show Recap patrons.
That is very true. So come join us in there. We'll be back in a few days' time with our episode 4 coverage of season 5. Don't forget to subscribe, postrecaps.com/thecrown. Until then, bye-bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.